Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 142 of Getting It Out podcast. That was Fight Back Mountain with Fatima. You might have heard them before on this podcast. I've played their old tracks a couple times, but that's a new one. They're a really cool band out of St. Louis, Missouri. What's the correct way to say that? Is it Missouri or Missouri? Mizzou? Man, lots of questions. Anyway, Fight Back Mountain, they got this song, Fatima, that you just heard. Officially, I believe it comes out October 16th, but a little sneak preview for you here on Getting It Out Podcast. So if you're into that band, be on the lookout. It'll be on Spotify, Bandcamp, you know, all the streaming services. So be sure to look them up. Okay, so what else is going on in this episode? A lot, all right? This episode, the main event is an interview with Dave Smalley. Okay, wait. The original main event was an interview with Dave Smalley. Dave Smalley is a name that I assume if you listen to this podcast, you probably are at least well aware of. DYS, Dag Nasty, Down by Law, All. Now, Don't Sleep. He's done his own things. He's done just solo acoustic Dave Smalley stuff. He's done Dave Smalley and the Bandoleros. It's all sorts of projects, but always the vocalist and one of the most distinct voices in punk rock and hardcore history, in my opinion, at least. It's pretty, you can't really argue that, but you can try. So after I recorded that interview with Dave, I thought, that's a little short. It was on the shorter side, you know? And I thought I should put something else in here. Maybe I should get Akil from Up the Blunks podcast and End It to jump on and talk, just fill us in on what's going on with Up the Blunks over on Hard Times and what's happening with Baltimore's best hardcore band right now, End It. And so we did that too. But then we ended up talking for way longer because we're friends and, you know, that's how it goes. So this kind of became a longer than usual two-for-one episode, and that's fine with me because both these conversations were cool, and I'm glad to share them with you. So, without further ado, the greatest crossover thrash band ever from New Jersey, Hot Zone.
Yeah, what's good, all you bitches and bitches? It's the illustrious Hot Zone, back at it again with another podcast intro. They said, oh, you want to do a podcast intro for the Getting It Out podcast? I said, oh, shit, I gotta write a rap verse, don't I? He said, nah, you don't gotta write a rap verse. It's a hardcore podcast. I said, all right, I think I can maybe make that happen. Let's see what we can do. Kick it. Make family out of friends. Make friends out of enemies. Peace to my family. Make friends till they bury all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out. We be getting it in. Where you getting it out? I said, all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out. We'll be getting it in. Why you getting it out? Get it out! Alright, motherfuckers, you're in the right place at the right time. Rest in peace, Jay Money, and LFTW forever!
Alright, so here we are. I'm not going to take up a lot of time with my usual spiel that happens at this point in the episode. Lots to talk about, of course. We had another wonderful debate on TV this week, and you know, that was a thing that happened. So we could get all into that, but we're not gonna, because we care about our mental health or something. I don't. I'm just trying to avoid it. But let's go straight into my conversation with Akil, and that's it.
Yo,
what's that?
Not much. What's up, Kareem?
Well, I gotta tell you, I just got this guy out of my house. He was in here doing some tile work for us, so like I'm real happy about that, and he did a great job. But he just kept telling me things, and it just gets a little overwhelming. And I started realizing I was getting aggravated at him, and you know, he had to go, and I needed to talk to you.
I knew something was up because you texted me and said I just got this bozo out my house. I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, he's been here for like 2 days. Like he's been like an hour late the last 2 days, and that bothers the shit out of me, right? Don't tell me you're going to be at my house and then be here an hour late, and. But he's doing a good job. But he likes to cut me off and like talk to me like he's teaching me stuff. And I'm not here for a lesson. I'm at my house. Leave me alone.
Don't you fucking hate that?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I do. I really
You're
do.
You're not my dad. If yeah. I can be honest, I kind of hate my dad. So don't fucking dad me.
Exactly. I'm paying you to be here, which involves you not telling me extra things. Just put the tile on the floor.
Right, just put the towel on the floor. You know, we can talk about football. We can talk about a multitude of things. But don't try to act like because you're older than me, you're going to teach me something, you fuck. You obviously haven't learned about having a better job.
that's unfair. That man probably makes more money than I do, but that's all right. You know, that's all right.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe, but, you know, who gives
He's
a shit?
He's also a criminal for not paying his taxes. Are you paying him cash?
Oh no! He's got he wants cash, but I think we're have to go through a credit card just because that's more convenient for me.
Give him a fucking traveler's check.
It's get real complicated.
Uh huh. Well, what's up, Curly? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing very good.
Hell yeah.
You? What about you? I've been listening to you a lot lately, so I feel like I'm up on what's happening with the Keel, but maybe not. What's happening with you?
It's wild how many people want to hear this dumb shit come out of my brain. Things are fine. I don't really got much to complain or brag about. Fuck Corona.
That's pretty middle of the road. That was pretty basic. I was just watching Mike Pence and Kamala Harris talk, and you sound just like them. Very political. Right down the middle of the road, right?
I mean, that's how we go. I was watching that right, like a little bit before you called. And yeah. I was like, this is going to sound crazy, but I don't care. I would much rather Mike Pence be the president because, like, yeah, his politics suck. But at least the filter that it comes through is more presidential than like, this wild, cooked-up asshole we got.
Absolutely. Totally agree. I hate them both. But and that guy seems like a weirdo that likes his mom, like, too much.
He would not be opposed to his mother tucking him in like, and telling him he loves
yeah,
him.
if his mom and his wife get in an argument, he takes his mom's side, you know?
He definitely sides with his mom.
Every time, yeah. But
while rubbing their shoulders, he's like, you know, she got the fucking blood pressure, stop it.
She's got a point, though. You know, yeah, yeah, I can...
You can be kind of a cunt, Gina. I don't know if Mike Pence's wife's name is Gina, but for all intents and purposes.
Well, probably there's probably an R in front of it. It's probably real Gina, but that's all right, you know. But okay, so I mean, you know why I wanted to talk to you. People who are going to hear this might not understand it yet, but you came on the podcast with me back at the like last episode of last year, I think it was, and we were just talking about End It. And when we were talking bullshitting on there, we mentioned, I'm not going to say I inspired you to do what you did now. I'm not going to say that at all. I mean, it's quite a coincidence, but I'm not going to say I was the inspiration in your life or anything. But we talked about how you need to do a podcast, and you did, in fact, get that going. And
Yeah, I haven't spoken to you since I established my own. Well, a podcast was established for me, and then I joined one.
Tell me about that. What happened? We're obviously talking about Up the Blunks, and where did Up the Blunks come from, and how did you get involved with this?
So let me give you the rundown, and I keep telling this fucking tale because it's actually kind of cool. So the other person I do Up the Blunks with is my man Kevin Titt. Shout out Chill Parents, P. Lyle, his two bands that he, I believe Kevin plays bass in both those bands and sings in one. So the dude Kevin's a comedian.
Yeah.
He came up to Baltimore to do a couple sets for the Baltimore Comedy Festival. And in between doing his sets, we happened to play with Turnstile at the Why Not Lot.
Which is a place, so, right? All right, so look, I know that's an outside place, but people say, like you just said, like the Why Not Lot, like that's a place that anybody would know. I never heard of the fucking Why Not Lot. What was happening there? Why were you playing in
the parking lot? By the time the Why Not Lot was established, you had Mazzy and fucking grew up. So also, to interject, how your daughter?
Oh, she's fantastic. Actually, she just got two teeth pulled today, so she's a little sad, but she's all right.
Oh, shit. Hell yeah, that's good to hear, though. Because getting teeth pulled means she got insurance, and parents So anyway.
That's right.
So fucking, the Why Not Lot is right there. You remember Wind Up Space?
You sure do, yeah.
It's right next to Wind Up. So we're playing with Turnstile, Why Not, DDM, and Truth Cult. Truth Cult played. We featured Truth Cult on one of the first episodes.
That's a cool band. I just listened to that LP a couple weeks ago, and I feel like I was late to them because it's got some people in it that I know. But damn, I didn't realize how good that band was when I listened to that record. I think it's on Popwig. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I love that fucking. I do got to give it to the district. I have a lot to say about DC, and most of it ain't positive. But that DC sound, that like nobody else did that. You know what I mean? Like there's that certain sound you hear that's like that Fugazi Egg Hunt. That's that DC noise. You know what I mean? Anyway,
Hold on. Wait. It's going to be hard for you to get the story off because I'm going to keep interrupting you because you just can't drop things in there and like reference Egg Hunt because people talk about Egg Hunt way too much. That was a band with like two fucking songs. And now, and some people put it on a t-shirt. It's got an album cover where it looks like a cat looking out of a ceiling or something.
Isn't that hanging out a drop ceiling?
I don't know. It looks like a cat. The same way my cat looks down the stairs. It's just, you know, and
It's weird. As much as you know, I'll get rock hard for Madball and shit like that. But that whole Nation of Ulysses Discord DC sound, I love it because it's only pertaining to the Mid-Atlantic.
That's true. Okay. Let's keep going. You're right.
So I personally, I can say I've sat on YouTube and like there's bands I love. Like I ain't never listened to Open Mouth Kiss all the way through, and I love Leeway. But that's a struggle. Definitely listen to some fucking Egg Hunt.
All right. That's fair.
Because otherwise we can fucking nerd on this shit all night.
Absolutely.
So Kevin came up to play the motherfucking to gig for the Baltimore Comedy Festival, and he watched Ended, because that show was free. It was an outdoor show, and it was free. And our dumbasses ain't bring no merch. We were just like, oh, you want us to play? We'll show up. We'll play. So we're playing the show, and, you know, I'm on stage doing my thing. I think we had a pint of Evan Williams on stage, and mind you, I just got in from Chicago that morning. So, like, I left the airport, went home, used the restroom, changed my shoes, and then started preparing to play the show, which means I started drinking.
Back up. Why did you change your shoes?
Because I think the shoes I had, you know, like, if you're going to jump around and shit, you got to have the right shoes on.
Well, you got like traveling shoes? Were you wearing, you know, like slides or something? Were you wearing slippers? What were you doing?
Yeah, I'll say, knowing me, I probably had on like some Converse. I probably had on like some canvas Vans or something. And if I'm a play, shit, what shoes did I have on? I don't know. I can't remember. No, I probably had on some fucking Doc Martens and was like, I got to take these boots off and put something else on.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, you
wear Docs for 24 hours. Ain't that much skinhead in the fucking world. Your fucking feet hurt.
No, you wear them. Yeah, they're awful, awful shoes.
I didn't know shit can
hurt that bad. Yeah, feet are terrible.
Feet are terrible.
Yeah.
People say being paralyzed is a death sentence, and I'm like, I don't know, man. You save a lot of wear and tear on your shoes. At any rate, that was horrible, and I should have my ass kicked. So, Kevin came up, and so I'm on stage doing my thing. And apparently I said a joke that said, I met guys, that nigga smell like fish. And Kevin loved it. For some reason, he loved it so much that he wanted to do a podcast with me.
Well, I can tell that he loved it that much because I think he mentions that joke like every episode. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing.
That is our origin story. Like, so also during that set, I said the phrase, "Hey, can we Uber eat some cocaine to this stage?" People don't remember that one. That's hilarious.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's probably the better one.
That's a good one. They won't deliver you cocaine through Uber Eats.
You never know until you try. You know.
I mean, if you know the right Uber guy, but yeah. Right. So that happened, and then it had to be George Floyd. this is going to sound horrible as a black. I don't remember which black died at the hands of the police. There's so many. Pick one. But one died. One died. And the Hard Times, because Kevin writes for the Hard Times.
Okay.
So the Hard Times reached out to him and was like, hey, we need to save face. Would you like a podcast? And Kevin was like, well, shit, yeah. And the thing is, the best part about the Hard Times, because everything is so tongue-in-cheek and satirical, I do appreciate that I can talk about them like that and no one gets butthurt.
Right.
Because that's the part of satire and comedy. I mean it, but I don't really mean it. But they hollered at Kevin and asked him would he like to do a podcast. And he said the first person he thought of was me. And here we are, what, we 8 episodes deep now?
You are. You're 8 episodes in, and I haven't listened to the 8th one yet with, what's her name, Regina? Is that?
With Serena.
Serena. Sorry. We were talking about Regina's, and now I'm just got Regina's on the mind. I haven't listened to that
one
yet.
I'm sure you know Regina. I know for a fact we've all partied in the same room.
Probably. Those years are quite hazy, though. But I've been listening to, like I said, to pretty much all of it so far, and I knew you'd be good at this. You knew you'd be good at this. Has this gone as well as you'd hope? Well, fuck. Well, hold on. I want to get on one. You had Chappelle Lacey on there for 2 episodes, not just one, but 2 episodes. That's not a small name. He's a pretty damn big comedian, black punk comedian apparently too, which I never knew, never would have known. I've heard him on Rogan. I've heard him on, I've heard him mentioned on Rogan. I heard him on, Fighter and the Kid recently. Like, so this ain't just like a small time guy. And then he is talking to you guys. What's up with that?
So like, apparently him and Kevin had, they did a weekend, I believe, doing comedy gigs and found out, they're both black, they're punk. And, we got the Hard Times back, and Kevin and him, I guess, established a good rapport when they worked together. He reached out to Chappelle, and we just ended up with an episode. And it's funny you would mention that, because I didn't know the dude. I just knew he was a comedian. He black. Cool. And then I looked up his resume, and I was like, oh, shit. I was like, that's cool. So that's good company to have.
Yeah, always. It's always. And it gets surprising for me, myself, from doing this. When you find yourself having a conversation with people, I don't know, that you never thought you'd, not necessarily wouldn't think you would talk to, but you wouldn't think you would get along with. I don't know. And hearing the conversation between you two and him, obviously you guys have a lot in common. And I know that's what Up the Blunks is kind of focused on. It's all about being black and punk, right? That's the whole premise.
You gotta be a punk. You can't be a fucking metalhead. Like, you can't just be some rando hardcore kid. You have to have some type of punk rock background, my guy. If you ain't listen to the Toy Dolls, you don't get to come on my fucking show.
I want to know, like, when someone, like, what have you had people, like, trying to get their music played that just, like, think they're, like, back in the BLM, so they should be able to get played on your show?
So, I can't, I will say, I look through your emails and, people send their music in. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, all right, look at it this way. They're black and they're alternative, so I'm going to give your music a listen. But I'm still a fucking elitist piece of shit. So if it ain't punk, I don't fucking care. Because this is called Up the Blunks. Here's what you do. If you want to play metal, you find some 2 token metal guys, and they start a podcast and be cool, and then y'all can discuss that shit on there. But this is Up the Blunks. We listen to punk. I'm a punker. I got a fucking black flag tattoo in the middle of my fucking forearm. I absolutely hate it, and I'm not going to cover it up. Because them's the rules.
Well, I like that you guys even came. I didn't know the phrase Blunks. Am I late on that? Am I too white to have known that Blunks was already a thing?
That's some shit me and Dick Calhoun made up.
Oh, okay. There you go.
We were just like, punk, black punk, Blunks. Actually, it's funny. I had to explain that shit to my mom. So my mom's like a Baptist black lady. I believe Deb's 63 years old. And I was like, yeah, Up the Blunks. And she's like, what's a Blunk? And I had to break down like punks with an S, then punks with an X, and then put black. And she's just like, well, okay, that's cool. I like that. That's great.
That's nice. Isn't it nice how your parents just like, what's the word, not entertained. They just, they just like, listen to your shit, and they're like, all right, yeah, fine, that's whatever.
That's great. You know what, Keel? I'm glad you're not overdosing in an alley, and that's wonderful.
Yeah, do whatever you think is fine. That's great.
That's great. Are you alive?
Yeah.
Are you hungry? No.
How's my grandchild? That's.
Yep. I remember when I was in Malicious Code, I remember my parents, they sort of kind of sat me down because I had to go to play a show. And they were like, so when you guys play these shows, who arranges, like, the payment and whatnot? I'm like, well, you know, it's like DIY spaces. You play the show and you get paid.
Maybe.
Whatever you get paid. And they're like, okay, so like, you may not get paid? I was like, yeah, sometimes the money goes back into the band, you know, recording and traveling and whatnot. They're like, Keel, I gotta ask, you're 27 years old. Why do you do this? And I'm like, all right, you fucking quiz. I guess passion. I guess I'm passionate.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's what they call it. But, you know, we...
Yeah, that's what they call it. I'm passionate about this thing. I'm gonna be honest with you, Dave. I don't fucking know why I do it either, but we got a show to play, and I'm gonna go play it.
But hey, but that might have been the way it was for Code, but End It, let's talk a little bit about End It right now. Give me a little End It update. End It seems to have a bit more of a mission behind it, and I'm going to get in trouble now because I just bought a t-shirt with a bunch of cops hanging on it when I walk around my white neighborhood. And
I wish I could tell you who drew that. All right, boom. I can tell you who drew that because I ain't supposed to tell you who drew that. So, like, maybe this will make the cut, maybe not. You can blur this out.
Yeah.
Yeah, he drew that.
Yeah, I do. He draws a lot of things.
He draws all types of shit. I was so pumped. But, like, the thing is, you know, the kids classify me as an old head.
Yeah. Which is funny, not funny bad to you. But funny, just, it's like, holy shit, I guess we are.
Right? Because I'm like, funny. How the fuck am I old? JR is an old head.
Yeah.
Dougie Fresh, an old head. Yeah. I am 30 years old. Don't call me fucking old head.
I don't know. I think that qualifies, though.
I guess, because by 30, most times you've matured out of this shit and grown up.
Yeah, that's true. But what is End It gonna do now? You had One Way Track come out beginning of this year, I think it was. Obviously, you guys aren't playing shows. Is there any recording going on? You practicing? What's happening with End It?
So they practice. I get songs to write to all the time. We are in the process of recording another EP, and it's gonna come out on Flat Spot. So that's sick.
Yeah, that's awesome. Flat Spot's a good space for it.
You see us selling t-shirts and shit, and, you know, that's our way of still, you know, there's still that, like, political connection and being a punk. Like, you know, we sell these t-shirts and the benefit shirts, and then we donate all that money to different organizations. So that's pretty much what we're doing. And just a lot of goofy shit in the group chat in the hopes that the world opens up, we can get back to doing it.
That's fine. So End It now is basically just a group text, and that's all right.
It's pretty much just a group text, and like I'll make contact with at least one or two dudes a week. Like, say something stupid, send a meme or something, or come by to someone's house. But yeah, we ain't up to shit, and it's real unfortunate because we had United Blood. We were gonna play with Shark Attack and the FUs. We had all types of shit come up, and then life happened.
Yeah, but at least life happened to everybody. You know, it's not like it just fell off.
It wasn't like I got arrested and it stopped. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, hey, I guess we're talking group text. How do you do in group text? Like, because here's me in group text. Me in group text is I don't really say anything for like 3 days, and then somebody says something, and I make a joke, and then it's just total silence, and then it shuts it down for like 3 days.
Yeah. So shout out to being able to double tap something and meme. Like, well, it'll be something fucked up, and you can send it to the group chat. On our Instagram group chat, it's mostly me stoned out of my mind sending them skateboard clips, and the only two people in the skateboard are me and Chris.
Yeah.
And you figure I would send them to Gons, but we're a group, so I send them to everybody.
That's all right. It depends on your state of mind. You're just being, you know, free. Everybody should enjoy this, and that's very kind of you. to be honest.
And now, can very, I go back?
Very rude of them.
For a second, though?
Yeah, of course.
To big piggyback off of that, speaking of Chappelle Lacey, one, shout out Chappelle.
Yeah.
Really sick dude. Like, actually a really nice dude. But you got to talk to them goddamn dudes and Sick of It All, didn't you?
I did, yeah. That was a few episodes ago. And you know what was the cool one about that one? Is that not necessarily themselves, but they, I was contacted for that. That wasn't me reaching out. That was,
yo, for real?
Yeah, and that's a huge difference, you know, when you got the people coming to you instead of you going to the people. And there's been, you know, that's most of my stuff now. But for somebody for Sick of It All, that's really cool for me, you know.
You know what's wild, and this is gonna come off. I've been getting a lot of flack lately, as if I'm like a cis white male apologist. You know what I mean? The way the world's going, everyone's reading history books and recognizing being a cis white man is the worst possible thing that could be happening to someone right now. Like, everyone's pointing the finger at y'all, like, yo, y'all been fucking up for the last multiple centuries. Everything.
Yeah, but hold on.
Problem, right?
Hold on. You say that, but it's not that bad. Like, it's like, if that's the worst thing that ever happened to us, we're all right.
You're still doing just fine. But, like, you actually came up in conversation. I was talking about how with the progress and evolution of the world, the hot thing now is having more marginalized people brought to the forefront, right? But right. I know you personally, and I know the quality of the podcast you have, the quality of music knowledge you have, and I'm like, damn, Crayley deserves, with the amount of time he's put into music and the blogs and all that shit and what he's doing with his podcast, clearly deserves some benefit from that. But he should have did that shit 10 years ago, or maybe he should just become black. I don't know what you're going to do. Maybe you, Michael Rappaport, can splice some DNA and make something happen. But you're fucked.
You're absolutely right, but I totally appreciate that. And that's hilarious. That's fucking funny.
Because you actually one of the first people to introduce me to Crutch. And stuff like that. I think you just posted something on Facebook one day, and now I'm running around singing Brotherhood, Sisterhood to myself, and I'm like, yo, and that is literally all because Dan Crayley posted some shit on Facebook. Like, Crayley's a cool guy, but he ain't gonna get the respect I think he deserves because of all the problems all the other men who look like him have caused.
Now, you know, I don't blame anything like that for nothing, you know, because I would really be a fucking, you know, that would really look bad. But I don't feel that I don't feel that way either. But there's, you know, there's, I know to get eyes on shit, I could do other things but whatever. But my whole thing when I started doing this, and the only thing that I can, that if only, only advice I could give, not that you're asking for advice, the only advice that I can give to you and Kevin and Up the Blocks is just the fucking consistency. The consistency is the most important. If I keep doing this, and I have now for almost 3 fucking years, not missed a week for 3 years.
Yeah.
That's what counts. You know, that's what gets people checking it out. And if people don't like it, I don't give a shit. I don't know about it. I don't know about the people who don't like it. You know what I mean? They don't.
I'm gonna be honest. You just cut out. I didn't hear anything you
said. I'm saying
which is unfortunate because we were having a good talk.
Yeah, no. Okay, so I'm saying the consistency of doing this has been the most important. Has been the most important thing. And for the people who aren't, you know, who aren't with whatever I'm doing or whatever you're doing or whatever, it doesn't matter because you don't, like, I mean, if you're an adult like I am, you don't hear them. You're not connected with those people. So who gives a shit what they have to say? Like, I don't even know what they're saying. So where would I go? Where would I go to hear people that I don't know say something negative about what I'm doing with this, you know?
Exactly. And, like, why would I seek that out?
I don't even know where would I find it? Like, I mean, I could
I'm going to be honest. You know where you would find it? You say something controversial, and then you hop on Twitter.com. And Twitter.com ain't got nothing but a bunch of bored motherfuckers looking for a reason to be upset.
I don't do Twitter, man. Never have.
I'm going to be honest. Don't.
Yeah.
Don't. I get on Twitter, and I find myself getting so fucking frustrated. And I'm intelligent enough to know, like, you could literally go do anything else. When I'm like, nah, no.
just want to stay here and get mad. Well, hey,
just tear into the murder square and anger yourself.
But with doing Up the Blunks, have you guys don't hit it hard with like promotion and shit? And I don't mean that negatively. I mean you're just keeping it with your personal stuff, right? You're not doing like extra accounts.
All right. But first and foremost, shout out to Mr. Kevin Tate for keeping up the consistency that is Up the Blunks. All I do is provide content for him and the team provided to us by the Hard Times to edit and produce. I've never really been good at self-promotion, even within like whatever goofy, dumb shit I'll post on the internet or End It or Malicious Code or something, because I do still have so many other things occurring in my life. Like when it's time to be in a band, it's time to be in a band.
Sure.
When it's time to be in a podcast, it's time to be in a podcast. Because outside of that, I got about 10 grand worth of child support looming over my head on top of trying to take care of my kids.
Right.
Like so many things fly at me throughout the course of one 24-hour day. I'm like, yes, I am a kill. I am an edit, and I do Up the Blunks. But also, a girl shit on my hand today and then told me she loved me. So I got a lot going on.
Hey, if I completely understand for several of your points there, so I know exactly what you mean. But my point is that you guys are killing it with the your episodes sound very well done. Whether you have a part of that, whether that's you just every now and then saying the word proclivity or some kind of vocabulary word that I'm not real sure I understand, like you know it's. You guys are doing great. It's you're only what 8 full episodes in, and you're killing it. I think it's awesome. I check it out. What is it? Is it every week? Is it every other week?
It's every other week, and we try to, in between weeks, have whoever we're gonna feature, music wise. Obviously, it's more likely a black fronted band. Kevin will reach out to that person and ask them a couple questions, and then that interview will be released on Hard Noise, which is another affiliate of the Hard Times.
Oh, I didn't know that part. I didn't know there was a whole whole extra step in there. I got to look into that.
You do raise a good point. And my older brother, a lot of people tell me this all the time, like, yo, you got to promote. But my whole thing is the way I use the internet, I don't want to be overbearing and overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because I don't want nobody to fucking, I find that, I do that in romantic relationships, interpersonal relationships. I don't want to be, like, I'm already a lot, right?
Right.
So, I don't want to beat a motherfucker over the head with me, because I already know to interact with me is a test of your patience.
Yeah,
I'm fully aware with who I am. I've woken up and drinking gin and live life. So, like, I get it. I know. Don't nobody want to necessarily deal with that shit all the time. But I guess maybe I should be more overbearing in terms of promotion.
You know, hold on a second. You know, I was just having this conversation just yesterday. Just yesterday, me and a guy who I don't talk to very often, but I love dearly, Jacob, who you know, of course, we're just having
Jacob,
the... Who we're having
Mr.
the...
Mr. Hennessy?
He said the exact same thing, and I can relate completely. You know, it's just realizing that, all right, we're a lot to handle sometimes. Maybe not myself so much now, but at a period, you know.
Man, that's the thing about all of us, like, Baltimore hardcore personality, so to speak, dog. Like, if you were around for the era of an Ethan and a Jacob and a Shay and a myself, you feel me? It's like, I love them and I'm glad they're alive, but holy shit.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, and I don't know. I was talking about, we were talking about, you know, how he is, how I am, and I was just talking about, I felt like I was a mean person. He was like, nah, you were funny. But I can see how.
Oh, not really. I've told you this before. I thought you did not like me at all.
Yeah, right, and I get it. I get it. Like I get why you would have thought that because I was kind of mean, you know. But
but hit me out. We're all kind of mean.
Right.
That's kind of our thing.
it's our trademark, right? But hey,
well, you could call it a trademark, but that's sort of kind of the, like, once you get in, you know, you got your surface level, hardcore people, blah, 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 personalities, popularity contest shit. And then once you start hanging out and you get to see who the real players and names are, air quotes around all that, that's like the initiation to this shit. Like, hey, I'm going to go punch that guy in the fucking head, right? You going to tell on me?
The answer is no, always.
And I know that's your friend, and I'm telling you because I'm going to go beat your friend up. But we're still cool, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, whatever. It's between you two, right?
That's between you two. Hey, you don't got to pick a side, bro. I'm not going to like him anymore because he's your friend.
Exactly. That's the way it should be. It has no bearing on that. And I don't need to be everybody's friend. I don't need to be everybody's enemy either.
As I sit on the internet and I hate to be a fucking dinosaur, but dinosaurs get evolved out and die for a reason. We go extinct. I look at how a lot of the younger generation is, and like they don't like each other, but everyone just like tweets at each other and subtweets and shit, and I'm over here like, y'all could just fight.
Yeah. It's all right. So I'll try to make it into a, well, fuck, we've already gone on way too long than we were supposed to, but let me I have this thing I always tell my wife when I do these podcasts with these younger generation, and I say generation, we know what we know. We're just talking like 10 years younger.
A hardcore generation is only like 4 or 5 years.
Right. So we're talking mid to early 20s. These kids, and yeah. I don't say that demeaning. These kids, when I have these conversations with them, like you and I are having right now, it's really hard to joke with them.
Yeah.
There's no jokes. It's like I say shit, you know how I am. I say stupid shit that I don't expect anybody to ever take me seriously. And it's just kind of like, okay, you know, and they're awkward and don't know how to react. And it's like, fuck, man, like, just lighten up. This is okay. Like, we can.
But remember, these kids didn't have that punk rock foundation. And, you know, like, there's pictures of Freddie Madball in a fucking YDL shirt. That does not mean Freddie Madball hates Jews. That just means he put on a YDL shirt.
Right.
So, like, what I've come to grips with this younger generation, a lot of space has been made for feelings and progress in terms of how human beings treat each other, right? We were making a step in a better direction as opposed to our fathers because, like, we would hug our friends and we would get naked in front of them and jump around and do dumb shit. These kids took it a step further, and they're like, they don't have to mask their actual feelings and care for their friends through the guys like hitting and punching and dick jokes, right?
Yeah.
They're way more mature than we are, is what it is. They're better people.
Right, but that's really boring.
And that ain't no fucking fun. I got to watch my fucking mouth all the time and worry about everyone's feelings all the time. Jesus, I don't even know what kind of feelings I got today.
You know what sucks though is that like we can say all that and feel this way, and then everybody and you do that, and then they act like you're voting for Trump. Like, goddamn, man! it's shades of gray here. You know,
you can literally assault someone for being homophobic, but the first time you slip up and say the F word because you grew up in the 90s and that's just how everybody talked, Ban Canyon.
Yeah, dude. Oh fuck, man! I remember being like, so you know. We used to use that F word like it was a normal part of our vocabulary, right?
And that was literally how you talk to your friends.
Right, and that was fine. I adapted. I realized, all right, that was a little fucked up. We probably shouldn't have done that.
That's why we're calling it the F word.
Right, so we don't do it anymore. But if you go back also the same time, I remember there was this band from right around here. They were on Think Fast Records, Reignition, all of them good guys, right? Very much all good guys. But they at one show, they called out me and my friend Scotto, who you know as well.
Scotto looks great, by the way. Shout out Scotto.
Scotto, yeah, he does. He's a fantastic guy. One of my favorite people ever of my life, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're watching them at a show at Princess Street. No, it was whatever. It was MXville Fire Hall around here. And they make this hard, like, statement about people being homophobic. And it's so clearly directed at us, and which we find hilarious. And then we leave there and go hang out at the gay bar, right?
Right.
Because that's what we would do. That's where we would go. We didn't care. We thought it was fun. And then while being there at the gay bar, a guy who's talking to us mentions that he put the floors in there, but he's not one of those F words. And I throw him into a claw machine and take a baller glass to the shoulder. And
it becomes so convoluted. Like, because these kids weren't there.
Right, but
and then
you know the ultimate irony of the characters I mentioned in this and the situation now, like make these grand statements right now. You're a homophobe because you say this word. And, hey, granted, it was the wrong word to use, but you know, whatever.
Okay.
Like, and
exactly.
And you guys were calling us homophobes, but I don't know. But that's a whole.
You know what I like to say to a lot of people, especially from the outside looking in. You look at all those like tough guy machismo alpha male hardcore guys, and I'm like, okay, let's break down what's actually happening here. It's a bunch of dudes who share the same feelings, screaming in each other's faces, hitting each other, and then hugging each other and apologizing. This is gay as shit.
Yeah, yeah.
We all got matching tattoos. We call each other brother and family and whatnot. There's a lot of homoerotic shit going on in this room. However, don't you dare call me gay, bro. I ain't gay. this young dude, I ain't going to call his name, but this young dude, he tweeted something the other day. He was like, yeah, I think I'm going to start calling myself an old head, to which I responded, you ain't homophobic enough. Which is funny, because that is. Like that's actually the truth. And of course, I was talking to my dad about this earlier, or someone, I can't remember. I tell people shit all the time. As life progresses forward, there's going to come a time that even these people who are the morally right and just people will become the wrong ones.
Yeah.
That's how evolution happens. They're going to get stuck in what they accept and believe to be true. And this younger generation is going to have more theory as people learn and get degrees and have more conversations. And then one day, I can't remember the turn of phrase exactly, but if you stick around long enough, you find yourself to become the villain.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And
that's just what happens. You and I are better people than our fathers because we don't believe that you should just fuck your kids up. You know what I mean? We talk to our kids.
I kind of believe you should maybe hit them a couple times, but you know.
I mean, occasionally you gotta pop them once or twice just to let them know who's in charge.
You just gotta make them harder. Like if you do them really hard one time, you don't gotta do it soft several times. You know.
I think about how much. Not even like I got my ass whooped enough, but just how hard I was raised in relation to the generation I'm a part of. I'm part of the generation that believed you should get a trophy even though you didn't win. Fuck that. You lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Why should I get a trophy for showing up? Fuck that. You lost. Try harder. Get a trophy. And now this generation come behind. I can only imagine in reference to that analogy.
Trump. You just voted for
these
Trump right there.
These motherfuckers want trophies simply because they thought about playing. Like, no, no. But that's the thing. If you try to uphold the standard, it becomes a slippery slope. And all I have to offer in to surmise all this is if you need me, call me. Otherwise, I'm going to be over here. It's a young man's game. It ain't got nothing to do with me no more. If a fucking Nazi show up, some blood and honor motherfuckers, some Keystone something or another, let me know. We'll make it do what it do. Outside of that, y'all can handle that.
Well, you know, I'll be there with you, and I think that's a good place to end this here. Because even though you and I were just supposed to check in with each other, and you were supposed to tell me about Up the Blunks and end it, I think we went like the whole entirety of the other interview is going to go on this, which is with Dave Small.
I mean, you can just make this another episode. We can do this monthly. With you so clearly. I've never expressed it to you. I inadvertently look up to you because, like, I know how much you know about this music shit.
Well,
and also,
I
thought you were the meanest dude ever. And now the fact that we talk is cool as hell.
Well, hey, I like what you're doing, Akil, and I appreciate you. And, you know, do you remember that one time back in, like, 2012 when I was living at your old place and I kept letting you know your W-2s were coming and you wouldn't come get them? I think you got – I think I got you into tax trouble, but, you know.
Oh, no. I got a tax lady. Shout out Ms. Alice. We got that taken care of. Here's the secret. If you only make a certain amount of money on paper, they don't bother you.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
But Curly, thanks for talking to me. I love you to the moon and back.
All right, same to you, Akil, and thanks for doing this. One more time, let's go over a couple things. Up the Blunks every other week, courtesy of Hard Times, right?
Brought to you by the Hard Times.
Brought to you by the Hard Times. And then End It's just doing some t-shirts here and there. But t-shirts for good causes. The one that I just bought was a benefit to which bail project was that?
I can't remember. I mean, I ain't even going to
hold
was,
you. What was, the latest, what was the latest, St. Louis maybe? I don't fucking know. The latest.
Yes, I think it may have been St. Louis.
Latest tragedy. Latest.
Was it Breonna Taylor? No.
No. I don't know. It's so hard to keep track.
We can't even hold ourselves responsible for that. Maybe the powers that be should stop killing people.
That's it. That'll do it.
And we wouldn't have egg on our face and trying to remember which nigga died this week.
That's it. That'll solve that problem. All right, Akil. Thanks for doing this, man.
Of course, Curly. Take it easy.
Yep, you too. Later. There you have it. Akil Godsey, ladies and gentlemen. The songs there, that was Lifer at the beginning and One Way Track at the end. Those are both off of the One Way Track EP by End It that came out on Flat Spot Records at the beginning of the year. Go check that out. I think they got cassettes for that. Cassettes and digital, I believe. And also keep on the lookout for the t-shirts like you talked about. I just got mine in the mail today that we were just discussing last night. So, you know, quick turnaround. You don't know how long it took, but I know that it was fast, and you got to take my word for it. Support that band, support what they're doing, and of course, go check out Up the Blunks if you haven't already. Him and Kevin do a great job with that podcast. It's very well done on hard times, as he said. And it's just a quality product, and especially if you're one of those people that feels like you need to do more, maybe you just need to listen. And maybe that can be what you do, is that you listen more and listen to black people talk about shit that matters to them and not shit that you decide matters for them. I don't know. But hey, I'm just another white guy who's full of shit, doesn't really know what he's talking about either. So we all got that in common, right? All right, so moving on to interview number two, this one with Dave Smalley, the legendary Dave Smalley. Dave Smalley of DYS, Dag Nasty, All, Down by Law. What else is there? Dave Smalley and the Bandoleros, but most recently, Dave Smalley of Don't Sleep. Don't Sleep has released a couple of EPs the last few years, but recently they just dropped Turn the Tide on Mission 2 Entertainment, and it's their first LP, and it's fantastic. And we're going to talk all about that, of course, and I'm going to play you some songs from that. But first, let's do that right now. This is Refine Me from Turn the Tide, and we're going to go straight into my interview with Dave.
Yes, ma'am. good, man. Well, I'm glad we connected and looking forward to chatting. What's shaking?
I don't know. Lots of things, but nothing too exciting. What's happening down there? Where are you at? Where are you located exactly?
So I'm in D.C. Well, no, I'm in Virginia, about an hour outside of D.C. Near a town called Fredericksburg, which is like a big Civil War town, battlefield town. That's my little world right now.
Okay, so I'm pretty familiar with the area. I'm from York, Pennsylvania, and then I lived in Baltimore, and I live in Lancaster. And so I know some of the guys that you're doing Don't Sleep with, and it was a thing that I was curious about. Like how did Don't Sleep get started with Central Pennsylvania guys, and then you down there? How did this thing even come about?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. I feel like the story of Don't Sleep is the modern communications story. So, and I'm sure it's not only us, but for this, in this case, Garrett Rothman, who is our bass player, he and Tony and Tom were in another band called Very Americans, sometime back. And, Garrett calls it an indie rock band. I thought they were more on the sort of melodic poppy punk side, almost like a little Elvis Costello type sound. But anyways, they were great. And I didn't know them. And one night I get a Facebook message from Garrett saying, "Hey, we're big fans. And, wondered if you'd want to do a show up here, a solo show, because we saw that you were doing solo shows." And I wrote back and said, "Sure, I'm interested, because I love doing the solo shows. If it's, up to Harrisburg area is only, 3-hour drive, so it's not too bad. And, that's about the outer range of what I feel comfortable doing,
Yeah.
So, so then he said, "And by the way, here's our band." And I listened to the first song, and literally by the halfway, one thing I'm really good at is a long list of bad that I'm at, that I'm bad at, but a short list that I'm good at includes, being able to identify really good music and sort of not even just subjectively, but objectively, right? So, like, I could tell these guys were really good. They had great sound structures. Their singer was good. The playing was fantastic. The energy was distinct, So they were a good, really good band and really appealed to me. And I wrote them back right away. By the end of the second song, I was like, "Okay, I'm definitely doing this show because I want to play with these guys. They're really great." And I still think that about Very American. I went up there and played, and we had a great time again. I hadn't met any of them, so it was all just a roll of the dice. And we did a few Dag Nasty songs for the encore of my set, and they played, And everything was fantastic. The karma was just good, kind of right away, So that's kind of the story. And then after that, friendships grew and collaboration grew, and next thing I knew, they were writing some songs for me to sing on, and I loved those. That was the first thing.
Well, that's awesome, and. I like that story because, again, I know some of the guys. Do you remember where you played in Harrisburg?
It was right in that main sort of nice area. There's a club. It was a nice club. I kind of really liked it. And there's a restaurant out front of it. We were on the sidewalk then. Garrett and Tony will remember. But I unfortunately I can't remember. If you said the name of it, I might.
I probably don't know it either. But the reason I'm saying that is because, I'm a huge fan of the Can I Say record. Dag Nasty's Can I Say, that record you did has easily been one of my favorite records. It's always in my top five list. Like I love that record.
And
a big part of it is obviously because of you. Because I don't feel that way about all the rest of the records, but my point is that I must not have lived here at the time, because there's no way I wouldn't have been there, being local, and that you were doing one of these shows. I know I would have been at that. And
actually, at this point, several 3-4 years back now, I mean, we've been kind of growing this, you know, just watering this plant for quite some time now, you know? So, it's 5 years. I don't know how long ago it was. Jared will remember all the details again, kind of like my, my scatterbrainness on the, timing of interviews and things. I often get confused. So I'll depend on Garrett to fill in the blanks. But thanks for saying that about Can I Say. I really do. That means the world to me. And I will say, you know, that I think that band, that lineup, that time, that moment was extraordinary karma.
Yeah.
I think it was something that I don't think anybody – I do think we realized it, actually. Sometimes, you know, you say, oh, I didn't realize it at the time. We did actually realize it. I think everybody realized that something was in gear there. Something was a spark that was kind of just you just didn't want to ignore the fire there, and you had to just kind of let it go and burn. And that was you don't get that every day. A lot of times, and that's okay too. That albums can be hard work, right?
Like, yeah,
they can just be, you know. You go in, you're tracking, you do the drums, then you do the bass, get the guitars down, do the vocals, you know, then you do the harmonies, redo a few tracks here and there, you know, and it's a labor of love. It's still art. It's just, that's one way of creating the art, right? And
right.
That's how a lot of albums are done. You know, I mean, I think I can't remember, what was it? Maybe it was one of the Metallica records where I think Lars Ulrich was doing the drums for like 2 months. Or something, you know,
yeah.
Because, you know, why not? If you can afford it, go for it, you know? And so that's one way of doing it. But the other way is to kind of ride the lightning. And you can't bottle it, you can't sell it, you can't redo it necessarily. If it's there, you got to ride it and go for it. And that's kind of what, there was a sense of urgency and passion in that Dag Nasty, Can I Say session that was, you know, palpable. You could taste it.
Yeah, not to totally get off track on Dag Nasty stuff, because I don't want to do that. But a friend of mine, we were talking about, I forget how the conversation was coming up, but we were talking about how much we love that record and I think the phrase he used was just, and it's along the lines of what you're saying, it was just like, it was like capturing lightning in a bottle. That was like, that record gets it, you know, and it doesn't seem like it was a reach. It's just you guys nailed it on that one, and it's that's why it stands the test of time.
Yeah, thanks, brother. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. We got lucky.
Yeah, hey, but whatever works, right? I mean, because clearly this has not just been a thing of luck for you, and that's what I want to ask about. You know, you jump in with and do Don't Sleep. But you've had all these bands going for forever, right? If you look at your personal discography, you look like you're trying to come up with alibis for where you've been every year. Like every there's not a hole in it, right? I don't see. It seems like there's not a year since I don't know what 80 something where you haven't released an album. So, like I know you said you heard Very Americans and you thought this is good. You saw them, you thought this, you know, I like these guys, but. I mean, it's definitely not necessary for Dave Smalley to start another new hardcore punk band. So, like, why do another one?
Yeah, that's a great question and well phrased. You know, I tell you, it's just, I made the analogy before that I think is fairly accurate that a surfer doesn't turn down a great wave when he or she gets that way, right? Like,
sure.
You might have just had a good, you might have just, you know, ridden all the way in on a perfect curl and had a great wave in, right? And ridden it all the way into the shore. But if you paddle back out, just say, yeah, I'll just see, you know, go, that's what I do, right? I'm a surfer. I'm going to go out and paddle out again. And then all of a sudden, the next, a brand new, beautiful, different, cool wave strikes and hits and rises, and what do? You know, you don't say, no, I rode the last one, so I'm not going to ride this one. You know, you bloody well get on your board and you ride the wave, and maybe you crash, maybe you ride it all the way in, maybe it's even better than the last one. So, but you got to ride the wave if the rave is there. And so that's kind of how I view it, you know. With those guys calling me and saying all these, you know, really things that I liked. Not just that they were fans, but that they, we talked about music and energy and, you know, sort of what we're, what our vision was. You know, we're all hardcore guys in our, you know, 40s or 50s for me, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody was on the same wavelength, and that's a huge thing, and you don't get that every day. And so, you know, I think it was just, I rode the wave, you know, and I'll ride it if it's meant to be ridden, if I can still ride it. And, you know, eventually there might come a day when I'm too tired to paddle back out, and, you know, then I'll just be on the shore and watching all the young surfers. But up until then, I'm the old man of the ocean, right? So I'll keep doing it.
That's all right, because you're doing a great job, and the this record Turn the Tide has been pretty evidenced by that. And like I said, you've been putting out music so consistently for so long, things that I didn't even know about. All right, like when I knew I was going to talk to you this week, I started looking, like I said, I'm a fan, and I looked, I was like, I didn't know about your acoustic record, I didn't know about the record you released earlier this year, there's so much stuff and so much things you put out, but when I listen to like the initial Don't Sleep, the first two records, like it sounds a little familiar. It sounds like something, you know, I would expect from you. And I mean that in a great way. And then this full length Turn the Tide though, it seems like it's a little more aggressive than you've been doing for a long time. Is this the most aggressive record you've been a part of in a while? And did Don't Sleep kind of turn it up a little bit for this LP as opposed to the EPs?
Wow, those are great questions too. So I think the short answer is yes to both of those. I think Don't Sleep did crank up the power volume, the power level. You know, we kind of went to 11, right? As Spinal Tap would say, you know. So we pinged it all the way on this consciously, because we just, it's kind of like the surfing thing again, because you can, right? Like all of a sudden you got these guys who are fantastic players, Jim Biedorf, amazing drummer, you know, Tommy McGrath, fantastic guitar player. I mean, he's in the same, you know, I've been very, very fortunate in my career to play with, you know, with Stephen Edgerton and Baker and Sam Williams, you know, and Pablo Manielis from the Bandoleros, who's also phenomenal, and now Thomas Rory McGrath. So and each of those guys has their own style, which is another thing I always look for. You know, does the band and the players and the writers have their own karma and their own chemistry and their own sound, or do they just sound like another band that's trying to be somebody else? And that's not the case for Tommy or any of these guys. They are who they are, and it has a distinct karma. So they cranked it up on the, you know, on the hardcore songwriting side, but for me, you know, it is harder than DBL, which is, you know, obviously the main thing that people know, because DBL got pretty, you know, pretty well known over the years, and that's, I'm very grateful for that. Sam Williams, he's a brilliant songwriter and a brilliant guitar player. And, we've been together for so long, you know, we're the Mick Jagger and Keith Richards of hardcore, right? I mean,
right.
It's just, you know, or you could say Stigma and Roger, you know, for Agnostic Front, they've been around together for so long.
Right.
You know, there's not that many duos that, in our world that are that productive and prolific and have been around that long. And so Sammy and I have done some really just incredible musical journeys together. And what I equate Down by Law now, you know, we started out as, you know, kind of in a way, and this is just by what I was writing instinctively at the time, it was kind of, you know, what Dag Nasty was meant to be as the next record in my mind, you know. And I didn't write it that way, but it was just where I was mentally, you know. I'd left, you know, Dagnasty, I'd done All, and then I was kind of feeling that melodic hardcore urge again, and I started writing songs, and then there's a definite, you know, parallel between, you know, you can segue from Can I Say into the first Down by Law album, no problem, I think. So, again, not intentional, but just how it was. But over the years, Sammy and I kind of really got better as musicians than we were, and his songwriting is so diverse and exceptional. His playing is so talented that I think I would equate us now more along the lines of Husker Du, in the sense that we're absolutely not afraid of beauty and melody, which that's one of the characteristics of Husker Du, or XTC, in England. Yeah. Sort of this, not afraid to push musical boundaries. And those two bands that I just mentioned are huge, I love both of them immensely, Husker Du and XTC. And Sammy's such a great musician that he's able to pull that off in his songwriting. So I know I'm kind of getting a long ways around your question, but so yeah, DBL kind of went into this beautiful melodic, side trip, side journey, parallel to hardcore. We have fast punky songs for sure that we love. It's part of who we are. But at the same time, the hardcore side, for Down by Law, we're not a hardcore band. I don't know what we are, a melodic punk band maybe. But we're definitely not a hardcore band. Like, you wouldn't call Husker Du at the end a hardcore band. You wouldn't call XTC a hardcore band. So we're somewhere closer to that. And then, so parallel to that, hardcore never stopped, thank goodness. And that was still part of my heart. So when I heard the stuff being written by Tom and Garrett and Jim and Tony Bavaria, I just, it really resonated with me. And they were writing knowing that it was me singing. So it's kind of cool because it just fit right away because they knew me, and they were like, okay, this is for Dave, and they wrote accordingly. And so it was just, a nice match.
Yeah, and it sounds comfortable. It sounds confident. It sounds like you guys have been a band for quite a long time, even though I guess it's really only been officially a couple years, right? And but then having said all those things about the way this would, you guys kind of had your ears pinned back for most of this record. It kind of ends with a bit of a curveball, but I guess not totally. Like, there's, knowing you and the guys in the band, it's not a shocker how the records in December come in, but it is different from the rest of the record.
Yeah. So, hold on. I'm just trying to tune down my, Madeline episode here. Yeah. Hold on. I got to figure out which one is the volume thing in here.
Are you good?
I can figure out which one is the volume. Hmm. Well, it's so funny. I'm trying to twist backwards in the DVD player in the car and figure out how to turn this off. I'll be ringing turned off in just a couple minutes, okay? Okay, hold on, Dom. Okay, all right. We're committing the felony of turning off episodes of Madeline. But
that's dangerous.
She's handling it. I know. No, she's great. So, So wait, now where were we? I've gotten sidetracked by Madeline here.
The wreckage in December.
Right. Yeah. So it's really interesting. This is a great story, and it speaks to art and creativity. So we wrote a bunch of really great songs, most of which you hear on the record. Plus, we recorded a whole bunch more that are going to come out as an EP at some time in the future. And we were signed to Victory, right? Which is Tony Brummel's label, which obviously Victory is a legendary indie label. And everybody was psyched, great conversations with Tony. He called me and he said, I love all these songs. They're great. Now I want you to go write some more. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I want you, Dave, to go and write some more. If you need to go in the studio and, play around for a week or so, whatever, just do whatever you need to do, and don't worry about time, don't worry about money, these are great, I just want to get, there's something that I want extra. And that was the first time I'd ever had that in all my career. No record company president had ever said, go write, be creative, I want what you've got, let me see what you got. And almost a challenge, right? Almost. It wasn't a challenge negatively, but it was almost like, I'm missing something here, and I want just, I want some, you know, some extra paprika on the meal, you know, or whatever. And, so I did. So I went in and I'd had this riff in my head for the wreckage for weeks and months. In fact, I was on tour somewhere in Europe. And I'd had this riff. I think I was with the Bandoleros, and I just had this riff in my head for the bass line. And I wrote the words, in my head, not written down, just, you know, this is the sound of the modern rebellion, you know, this is the sound of the modern moon, you know, and those lines just stayed with me in the vocal melody. It was in my, it was a really cool experience, and I knew I wanted it for Don't Sleep. It was, it had to be done not by a really, you know, a band like Down by Law that could knock that out of the park for sure, but
yeah,
that's almost like expected that Down by Law could do that, right? But to do it by a hard edge band of hard edge mofos, like, you know, what we were doing, I knew it was going to have an edge, a bite, a dark, somber something to it that, that was going to be the right thing, you know? So I knew I wanted it for Don't Sleep, and that had been in my head. So when Tony said, you know, unleash the beasts, right? Unleash the hounds or whatever, you know, I was like, okay, that's the first one. I'm working on this. I'm actually going to develop this out, write it out, you know, and I did. And then, and I also had this, this song, which is True North, in my head. And, it's a little different how it ended up on the record because Walter Streifels helped, you know, co-produce or helped produce that one.
Yeah.
And had some tweaks in that, you know, some very great tweaks. And that was a great experience working with Walter. So I had that come up out of that session too. And out of those days when, after Tony Brummel had said, go, you know, go forth and prosper. Right. And then there was one more that isn't on the record. And I still want to tweak that one up a little bit more. It'll be on the EP though, and has a little bit of a reggae flavor to it too. Not quite as much as The Wreckage. And then the last one, I wrote that in 2 hours, lyrics, music, everything. And I called Tom, our guitar player. He was just getting out of work at night. He's a bartender. He's just getting where I said, hey, you got any time? And he said, yeah, call me right now. So I called him. It was at 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night. I don't know what time. And I said, you know, I'm going to put the phone, open the phone and play this for you. And he said, okay. And I played it for him. And he's like, that's going on the record. That's fantastic. I love that. And it's kind of surprising because it's not a Tom-ish song, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is the guy who wrote such great songs on this album as the song Don't Sleep or as Walking in Sinai or, you know, some of these other songs that he did that are just, you know, hard, heavy, great songs. So he loved it. And he was the one, Tom was actually the one who fought for that to get on the album because he loved it so much. And it made it extra special that it be kind of almost became his baby too, you know, and that it's really a positive, you know, experience to do that. So yeah, that came from just being creative and being told to just go and don't worry about any money or any time or any pressure or anything. And there's no musical direction, just go and write. And I've never had that before. So it was really awesome to have that, just that open-ended go, you know, and that was a really cool thing. And I think that's a testament to Tony Brummel and how he operates as a label owner.
Well, that's very cool. And it's refreshing to hear that because, I mean, from an outsider, you hear a lot about Tony and Victory Records. I've heard, and I think a lot of us have heard a lot of things about Tony, and usually it's not very positive. So to hear things like that, it's nice. I mean, he's got to be doing something right, right? Yeah, to hear, you know, that kind of confidence in your artists and who you got on the label and just telling you to go for it, that's very cool.
Yeah, it is. And you know what I always say about all that stuff, and I think there's no one in any part of life. I mean, I'm sure even, you know, Mother Teresa or Gandhi had people saying bad things about them, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
There's no one in this world, private citizens, you know, me, whoever, anybody, everybody has people who dog them, and especially in the era of social media and you know, people who just feel like they should just throw a grenade and walk away, you know? And but I would just encourage people to make sure you don't just believe everything. And there's some people who don't have stories that need to, like, I mean, I hate to bring in, you know, somebody famous like this, but, you know, look at Harvey Weinstein. He was the head of the biggest studio in Hollywood, and people loved him and adored him. And there were stories that weren't being expressed about him that apparently, you know, people had been, you know, suppressing, right, for years. And then, but the flip side of that is there's a lot of stories told that are negative about people that are often half-truths at best, or at least there's another side of the story, or they're just outright wrong. So, yeah, today in 2020 and, you know, beyond, it's way easy to throw a grenade. Harder to be smart and say, okay, I'll check this out for myself, and I'm not going to necessarily join the mob and pitchfork, torch and pitchfork crowd.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. That's a great point. And, hey, I don't want to keep you too much. I don't want to interrupt Madeline too much longer. But I want to get you one more thing in here. So listening to Don't Sleep, and like this, wow, this is another great record. And I think what's the theme here in this year that I'm noticing is that there's a lot of we'll say the polite term, like scene vets putting out records with new bands, particularly this year, that are, you guys are just killing it. The big one for me has been Brian McTernan and Be Well, the guys in Be Well. That new record is fantastic. You guys with this, Rob Fish did a new one with Every Scar Has a Story, and there's just a lot. I feel like there's a lot of them. There's a lot of people, older guys starting newer bands, putting out great records. What do you think's behind this? Why is this happening all of a sudden?
You know, it's a great question. I don't know the answer though. I concur 100% on the Be Well stuff. By the way, for folks who don't know, Brian was also part of the Don't Sleep album, right? So, he was, when Walter was doing the producing, for us, when we were doing our first tracking, we were at Brian's studio, Salad Days, and, in Baltimore. And then, he was, really helpful, to me on a couple of, a couple of parts and working through some things. And we're really looking forward to working with him again as a producer at some point. And also, hopefully my goal would be to see a Be Well, Don't Sleep tour. If we ever get back to the touring world, I would go see that, you know.
I would too.
That's kind of one of my guides. Like, when I go to that night, even if it's a Tuesday night in, in Cleveland or whatever.
Tuesday night's tough, but you know, yeah.
Tuesday night is tough, right? I would probably go, you know, as long as, you know. And that's another thing too, man. I think that part of the shows, okay, obviously we got to be smart about, you know, unless the whole world is suddenly immune somehow to COVID or whatever the next freaking, you know, thing is, because there'll probably be another, unfortunately, you know, depending on who you believe, either the Chinese made it or it came from a bat in Wuhan. So either way, that could be repeated, right? So there could be more of this coming, unfortunately, or, you know, a terrorist devising something on purpose. You never know. So we got to be smart. But the other thing is, you know, to your point, Tuesdays are bad, and they are bad. So how do you get a show? Because the band has to tour and play, right? Because every night a band that isn't playing, they're spending money, and at a mid-level, hardcore level, that's tough, right? You got to pay for food, for hotels, for gas, for, you know, everything. And so how do you get that Tuesday night? Well, one way you do it, and Down by Law has started to get a little smarter on this, because for a while we were just eating it, because we would be quote unquote the headliner every night, right? Mm-hmm. And we'd be playing a Tuesday night in you know, wherever, Fort Lauderdale or pick your, you know, place, and they'd put us on at 12 o'clock at night on a Tuesday night. You're the headliner. Well, guess what? Probably 100 people at that point would have come up to me, found me either, you know, floating around or, you know, at the merch stand or whatever, and said, "Hey, we gotta go. Yeah. We have a babysitter. I got to go to work in the morning. You know, I'm too old to see a show at midnight anymore. I don't like it. Yeah. You know, which all of which I'm like, yeah, I got it. You know, and inevitably I would always say, let me get you a refund. And inevitably the people would say, no, just keep it. We're really bummed we can't stay. You know, but we told our babysitter we'd be home by now or whatever. You know, and so how do you get smarter on doing shows for punk bands? And one way is for the promoters to realize that, yes, they want to, you know, the bars and everything and the clubs want to keep people there because they want to, you know, there's more people staying and more people having, you know, drinks and enjoying the night and all that stuff at the show. But I think we got to revise how we do things. And TBL has just started to say, we won't go on past 10 o'clock. Like we're going on at 10 and off at 11, you know, and that's it. So we've just started to be kind of, you know, serious about that. And I think that's what Don't Sleep and everybody else should start doing too. And I think hardcore's been guilty of trying to act like we're all 19-year-olds on a Friday night every night. And that was cool in on a Friday night in Boston in 1982, but not so much anymore. So I think we need to revise that. So I think as far as why these bands are all doing that, man, it could just be something in the water. I don't know. It's just great to see sort of creativity surge, you know, and bands being creative and coming together. And the old guard, you know, what we bring to the table is, you know, a lot of experience and knowledge and training in what we do, whether that's a guitar player or a singer like Brian McTernan or you know, whoever, you know, your example of choice is. You know, Jim Vidor from Don't Sleep, man, the guy is a perfect mix of thunder and finesse. I mean, he reminds me of a John Bonham or a, you know, I don't know, a Neil Peart or whoever, you know. And so that's because Jim Vidor is in his 40s and has been playing for decades and really got great at his craft, you know. And so when you see Jim Vidor play for Don't Sleep, you're watching a really masterful drummer. And that's because of, you know, being, you know, having that experience. So I think you need the combo of the veteran guys who are, you know, pretty damn good musicians, hopefully, if they're still doing it by now, and then mixed with the energy and enthusiasm that we've all had, you know, since hardcore started. So if you can marry those two up, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of good points there. I love the idea of refining the show process, but and also the kind of obvious thing that even though nobody really says it is the guys who have been around forever, you got to be better at your instruments by now, right? You got to be like hardcore was one of those things where you can play it if you don't really know how to play your instrument, but if Vinny Stigma's got to know how to play guitar by now, right? You know, he's
yeah. Well, but see what Stigma brings to the table among many charisma. Things. He brings a lot, but charisma out the, you know, wazoo, right? And then, but plus just you know, the energy, and I guess that's part of charisma. But you know, the whole thing, and he's again, I think AF has great players.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Silverman, I mean, yeah.
Mike is, Craig. I mean, they're phenomenal, and obviously, you know, Roger's a you know, hardcore Hall of Fame first rounder for frontmen. So they're great. So, but I think there are some bands that you know, maybe just, and that's okay, right? It's okay to not be great and just do it for fun.
Oh yeah, it's like part of it. Yeah,
when I do a drawing, right? I'm okay. I'm pretty bad, you know. But yeah. I like drawing sometimes, and I'll try and sketch an idea out of, you know, visually. It usually is pretty bad, but I have fun with it, and that's cool, you know. And so not everybody is meant to be doing everything, but most of the old guard, I feel like, that are still doing it, or, you know, have got something that they've practiced and gotten really good at their art. So I think the old dogs still can bark.
Well, I think you're right, and I think you yourself in Don't Sleep and Turn the Tide is a great example of that. And you know, it's just you're exemplifying what you're saying about other people. So, and as a fan of yours, your output has been over how long has it been now? When's that first record you came out with?
I think my first record was 82, 83 somewhere, probably 82-ish, 82 for a Brotherhood, I think.
So that's what, almost 40 years now?
Yeah, that's crazy to think about, but yeah, I think that's right. 82, 92, 02, 12, almost 22. Yeah. Yep.
That's nuts. Incredibly impressive. And you still got the voices. There's a distinct Dave Smalley voice. I know when I'm listening to a Dave Smalley record. Anyway, I just want to say again, I'm a big fan. Turn the Tide is great. It's been out now for
a couple
weeks, and I hope it's being well received. Thank you very much for doing this. Sorry to interrupt, Madeline.
No. Thank you so much. That means a lot. You know, I'll tell you one thing. Just my parting words of encouragement to people is, you know, have fun in life, believe in yourself, and work hard. You know. You got to have all three of those. You got to have fun doing what you're doing. You got to believe in yourself because sometimes you're the only one that does. And then you got to work hard, like you talked about, like we talked about earlier, to get better at your craft, whatever it is. Whether you're, you know, an accountant or an astronaut or a, you know, custodian or whatever you are in life, everything's good. There's no one thing better or worse than another. But you know, like think about a doctor who just kind of got C's all through med school and then kind of never read another doctor book in his whole career. You know, that's not the doctor you want.
No, right? I'm not going to him.
You know, yeah, you're not going to him. So how do you, you know, become to be that doctor that is the acknowledged, you know, leader in his or her field. It takes a lot of work. So I think whatever you do, you doing your podcast, I would bet a steak dinner that your first podcast to now, you've done quantum leaps in capability.
Yeah.
You know? So whatever it is in life that one does, both for fun and for profession, work hard, believe in yourself, and don't forget to have a little fun. And the fire will be there if you do all those things.
Well, I can't argue with any of that. Thank you again, Dave. And again, I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Hey, my pleasure. And thanks so much for the kind words about the Don't Sleep album. I'm super proud of the guys, and really the reactions have been super great. So looking forward to, if the world lets us, we'll hit the stage as soon as we can.
Ah, so am I. Can't wait to see it. All right, Dave. Thanks, man. So there you go. That was my conversation with the legendary Dave Smalley of Don't Sleep. The song that you just heard there at the end was No Other Way.
That's the second track off of Turn the Tide. Hopefully we've piqued your interest enough, if you haven't checked that record out, to go check out the rest of it. It's worth your time, especially if you're a fan of a hardcore, melodic hardcore, hardcore punk, whichever brand of hardcore you like to call it. It all sounds the same. Relatively. You know what I mean. I hope you will go listen to that whole record and give it a shot. It's well worth your time. Now, that's it for this week. It's been a lot. I'm glad you've been with me, but we did it, all right? We made it through a longer episode in Getting It Out podcast, and I think it was a really fun one. I enjoyed my conversation with both these guys, two guys from two entirely different eras, I could say, but both in the world of hardcore, and both with a microphone in their hand and still saying something, and that's something that's very cool and unique about them, about people like this. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything profound to say. I don't got to push it, all right? All right, so that's going to be it for this one. You can do the usual. Go to @getting_it_out_podcast on Instagram. That's usually the only place where stuff goes up. Maybe some facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast. And there's @gettingitoutpod on Twitter, but that doesn't get a lot of action. Gettingitout.net is still coming. It's eventually, it's on the way. So keep an eye out for that. You can be sure I will spam the shit out of everybody when that finally happens. Okay, that's it for this one. I got to figure out a song here to play at the end. Let me think about this. No, I thought about it. It was an easy one. Let's do the new song from London's Ironed Out. This one's called Pavement Strong. It's fantastic. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Off my team, go off with them thuns, see them at peak. Family roll deep with them G's who went shook with the heat. Shut up with mans, up on the scene. All these roof tests, man on my bikes. How many times am I getting there? So low when we flex to the eight to impress me. Yo, out in seconds like checkers be chess. Cause I'll fuck up your squad on my thuns. I bury you mans on my J's. I lost up a booze on more tests of the two. So I beg all you to his behave. We ain't no regular mans. Cause regular am I not with you? I've been playing with songs since the day I was born. I told you before that we're not gonna change.
Hey! Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.